Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lilydale Radio, featuring topics about spiritualism, mediumship, healing, spirituality, and the Lilydale Assembly, the world's largest center for the religion, philosophy, and science of spiritualism. This is Lilydale Radio.
Welcome to Wednesdays with Willa. I am your host, Willa White, and this is my weekly podcast show that airs on Wednesday mornings at 10 a.m. Eastern on my Facebook page, Willa White Medium. It's an opportunity for us to have a spiritual conversation with a special topic of the day. And I usually have a special guest on the show, and we could talk about things relating to either spiritualism, mediumship, healing, faith, family, or more. And there are other ways you can tune in to Wednesdays with Willa. You can check out my YouTube channel and also blogtalkradio.com/LilydaleRadio. I'm part of the Lilydale Radio family, and that is a listen-only podcast, and you can listen to the other shows that happen throughout the week. I'm really excited to introduce our guest today. She's back for another great show of Wednesdays with Willa. Her name is Dr. Brenda Hawkins. Thanks for being on the show today, Brenda.
Thanks, Willa. Thanks for having me in today.
Yes, it's great to have you back. And for those of you who don't know who Dr. Brenda Hawkins is, she is a registered Lilydale medium and a retired psychologist. And one of the prior shows we've done is Managing Emotional Overwhelm. So I encourage you to look back at the archive videos of the show if you go to my Facebook page, Willa White Medium, or even to my YouTube channel and type in Brenda Hawkins. You can listen and watch that again. And many people binge-watch the shows. They catch up because this is year six of Wednesdays with Willa. So a lot of great educational resources and a lot of great guests, a lot of great topics. And today is a very important one. It affects a lot of people out there. I know when I was looking at the show and this particular topic, and currently researchers believe that compulsive hoarding, because our topic today is grief and hoarding, and that compulsive hoarding affects one in every 50 people. And that some people say that it even impacts 1 in 20. And I think it's because of the friends and family. And that 5% of the world's population displays symptoms of clinically diagnosable hoarding. And then there are all these other levels and layers that are in there. So this is a big topic for people, especially as they're moving through grief or they're helping someone else move through grief. I am so excited about what you're going to bring to this topic today, Brenda.
Thank you, Willa. I've really been looking forward to speaking about it. Hoarding and grief and also anxiety tends to fall in with it, as I was sharing with you earlier. It kind of falls along the continuum, kind of like depression. You know how everybody gets the blues now and then there are people on the far other end of the spectrum where we have really bone-crushing depression, what we would diagnose as being major mood disorder, depressed mood. And then there are people who fall in between. Okay, so everybody experiences the blues, and then some people feel it more and more, and then there are people on the other end of the continuum. And hoarding can be the same way. Okay, clinical hoarding is where the hoarding is so bad that it impacts on that person's quality of life. Okay, quality of life is very diminished. It impacts on, it can impact on relationships, family, jobs, and some people manage to keep it from people close to them, and they keep it from their job. They maintain a facade, okay? And in that way, it's kind of like the alcoholic who drinks only at home, and nobody knows that they're struggling with a problem. Okay, so I was just wanting to say that to kind of put it in the realm of our very human experiences that we do have.
Yes, that's important as a reference associated with hoarding. And, you know, I think people watch those shows on TV, those reality TV shows now of hoarders and I think some other ones. And it is a big deal. And dealing with the nuances of that. And so I'm so glad you're going to be getting into that topic.
Thank you. Thank you. And one thing we know about hoarding and all of its varying degrees is that it can be triggered by grief and loss, okay, and also stress and anxiety. And before I go further, I'd like to wish everybody a Happy New Year, kind of reference how we're just now coming out of a season where there is a lot of stress, there's a lot of grief, as well as all of the gaiety we're supposed to be experiencing. And there is stress also. I was thinking about all the holidays that we have leading up to New Year's, and we can have like 6 different holidays, okay, if we begin with Thanksgiving, and then there are associated days with it, Thanksgiving, Black Friday, Cyber Monday, and nowadays they're starting the Christmas shopping season even shortly after Labor Day, okay, before Halloween. So that's also impacting on us as we go through the Thanksgiving season. Mm-hmm. And then there is Christmas, there's Christmas Eve, Christmas Day. There's also the 8 days and nights of Hanukkah. There's that beautiful holiday of Kwanzaa, which lasts for a few days. Okay, there's also Boxing Day that some people have in their tradition, the day after Christmas. Okay, and then we have New Year's Eve and New Year's Day.
Yeah, and there's also Twelfth Night, too, the 12 days of Christmas. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not too sure about what holidays, if any, may be going on in Buddhism and Hinduism. I haven't had a chance to look at that. I also know, too, in the nature-based religions, we also have the winter solstice, and there are celebrations with that. Mm-hmm. So no matter what holiday we're looking at getting people together, or having to get our houses all cleaned up and presentable-looking, meals to plan, presents to give, all of that, all the while maintaining our jobs, family connections, family obligations, and commitments. A lot of people are in that sandwich generation where they have kids on one hand, older parents on the other, and that's a lot of juggling right there, so that's a stressor too. Also, at the end of the year, of course, sadly, we do have loved ones passing. Friends, neighbors, people have been part of our lives for a long time, okay? And so as we get to the end of the year and we're reviewing what's going on, what has gone on during the year, it's going to feel strange for us not to have those loved ones here with us, which will naturally lead us to talking about, oh, remember how so-and-so used to do this, or so-and-so used to make the best noodle kugel, or the best roast chicken, you know, whatever it might be connected to the holiday meals, okay? So that comes up. Also, sadly, sad traumatic events also happen on holiday days, too. So you do have people who have lost people on Thanksgiving, on Christmas, on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day. For example, my father passed on Christmas morning, okay? And so with people who have had losses like that also, all of the decorations, all of the music, everything connected, and the smells even, because smell can be a very powerful trigger for traumatic or sad events. And so you may have family or friends who are trying to put on a good face, trying to be present, or they may need to just kind of stay away of this. And they may not feel safe enough or free enough to say, hey, thanks for inviting me, but I really need some space for myself right now, which it's okay to ask for that, whether you lost someone during the year or on a holiday day, okay? Always feel free to ask for what you need, because otherwise, how will people know? And then you wind up with people whose hearts are breaking inside, but they feel like they have to put on a good front.
Right, right.
And if you love someone, you care about them, you want them to feel good, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So all of that can trigger some hoarding. It's like when we're grieving, and therapists call it grief work for a reason, okay? Grieving is exhausting. It exhausts us physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. We feel like, as my parents used to say, a wrong out old ragged dish rag. You just feel like you're all gone, okay? And so when you're feeling like that, it gets real hard to maintain your regular chores at home, okay? You bring in something from the store, you put it down, and that's where it stays.
Yeah, there's an accumulation that can happen.
That's a very natural thing.
Yeah. I could share a story with you, in fact, about that recently, because in my bedroom, it had accumulated between the Christmas things that needed to go to the attic and bins of different things, and it got to a point where I could just walk through this narrow little channel.
Mm-hmm.
It was so cluttered in the room. And it was like that for 3 months. And just last week, finally got it all like up into the attic, back where it all belongs. And it's this like nice big open space. I can walk to the door without fear. It was like if I got up in the middle of the night, I was banging it. So I cleared it all out. And my son saw from the hall, and he's like, wow, it's all clean in here. And I felt kind of like this, I'd almost gotten used to the accumulation.
Mm-hmm.
And I was
kind
of like a little, like it's like the feeling of I'm happy to see the space, but I'm so used to seeing it cluttered and accumulated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd kind of gotten used to that feeling. And so it was like a taste of hoarding, shall we say. A little taste.
See how it's like on the spectrum of the continuum.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're describing, I think a lot of us have experienced, and it's so easy to normalize what we're seeing.
Yeah.
So that we don't really see how things are accumulating.
Right.
And that happens clear on the other end of the continuum with clinical hoarding. Again, it doesn't happen overnight, okay? It takes time for all of that stuff to accumulate. And so you kind of renormalize. And we naturally have that inclination because that helps us to survive and stay alive. Back when we were cave people,
mm-hmm.
we had to normalize all sorts of changing environments and events. The thing is, when we do that with stuff, it doesn't work as well for us, okay? So that's a very wonderful example of how it can impact on all of us at any time. You know, things just accumulate and it's almost like we don't see it, but we do normalize it.
And it's funny because it would bother me some days and it would not bother me other days. And then when it was gone, I missed it for a
yeah.
And I'm like, well, how long is this going to last, right? For my husband bring something in, or you know how that goes
for sure.
But you know, with grief and hoarding, there's that feeling of you're exhausted, like you said. You're exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
There's only so much you can do. Things are accumulating. But then there's that other side of it. Like I don't want to get rid of it or move it because the sentimentality.
Right,
of keeping something the same or keeping someone else's things, or it just kind of makes a moment freeze.
Right. It's so easy to get paralyzed when we're grieving. It's hard to think real clearly and objectively. And that's physiological as well as being emotional, okay, because we do have cortisol and all those other stress hormones going on going up to the front part of the brain where we make judgments, we make decisions, we prioritize, okay? And so, yeah, so again, we wind up getting paralyzed. And again, because we're so exhausted, we're not eating the right food, because who do you know has said, oh, I'm so exhausted, I think I'll spend a half hour cleaning and chopping vegetables, and then I'm going to make this great big salad, and I'm going to spend about a half hour, 45 minutes just eating it. Oh, I just love me some cold iceberg lettuce and some carrots. When actually people are saying, okay, where's the ice cream, where's the candy, where's the cookie? And so our bodies, which were kind of worn down anyway from the emotions, we're not getting the nutrition that we need to start getting some energy going.
Yeah, so there's okay. Clutter in the body, and there's clutter in the external, and
right,
clutter,
everywhere,
clutter.
At all levels, mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it can be hard to get a toehold, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, for you, with your example, you were able, you know, it's not like you were in that paralysis mode, okay? So you were able to see, oh, okay, I really need to do something with this stuff. It's driving me up a wall, mm-hmm, and you did it.
Yes.
Okay. And again, further along the continuum, it takes people longer and longer to recognize it until, you know, things are just clinical, it's unmanageable, okay? Mm-hmm. And also, then it gets to be, okay, it's so normalized, okay, I need these things. I've lost so much, at least I can depend on this old candy bar wrapper being here. You can always count on a Milky Way. I know of one clinical example where there was a young man who wouldn't even throw away his dog's hairs after grooming him, okay, because he felt like if he threw away the excess hair that was groomed out, he was throwing away his dog. Yeah, even though his dog was still alive. He still had his dog, but he felt like, well, I'm devaluing my dog if I get rid of his hair.
And how do you help a person like that? Because you can say, well, the logic says that's not throwing away your dog. So how do you help a person to be okay with throwing the hair of the dog away?
Yeah. Okay, to some extent, okay, working with your self-talk, identify. Mm-hmm. What it is you're telling yourself. He had to work hard to get to the awareness that this is what he was telling himself. That was the result of a lot of work, mm-hmm, okay? And just like with severe depression, okay, it's good to get the resource, to get the mental health help that you're needing. Mm-hmm. With severe clinical hoarding, it's good to get the mental health resources also, as well as a good organizer to give you the tools, okay?
Yeah, there are professional organizers that will help you with your clutter, and mm-hmm, I do refer people to Carrie Richard. She's been on the show before. She's uh-huh, they call her the clutter whisperer, so she's great.
organizers, you know, like her can be very helpful because, again, if we're deep in grief, and also the anxiety of having to let go of things, everything has a special meaning. It can be even physically painful to think about letting go of that, and we can't really prioritize and think, okay, well, this is more important to me than that thing is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, my grandmother's crochet doily that she made by hand and that I watched when I was five, watched her make, is more important than that old Milky Way candy bar wrapper that I ate when we went to the fair, okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So making judgments like that are so important.
Sure.
And sometimes we need the objectivity of professionals that we trust when we're really just super stuck. It's okay to get resources, okay? Some people feel like they have to, I call it John Wayne-ing it, where you just kind of put that stiff upper lip on and, you know, there's some sort of righteousness and even piling on more suffering. Okay, and that doesn't work. It really doesn't. Yeah. So it really takes some thinking through clearly of, okay, what do I want to keep? What can I donate? What can I really throw away?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that having that three-cluster mode can kind of help us, even just organizing our thinking if we're not ready to put it physically in those files yet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And to really become aware of, okay, what am I thinking? What will happen if I get rid of this thing?
Yeah.
As opposed to that thing. Which thing weighs more for me? Weighing me, meaning more of a priority.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Not weighing as in heaviness, but more of a priority. Okay. Which is more crucial.
Right.
Okay.
Well, you know, and then you have people who say, well, my wife passed. I want to keep as much of her items around me as I possibly can. You know, they want the essence of their person to be with them still, to surround them. And, you know, they're keeping the pillow and a lot of the clothing and the items because it otherwise the emptiness is too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you say to someone who's in that state of mind? And to some extent, I empathize. I
mm-hmm.
feel like yes, keep some of that stuff. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your wife is valuable to you. But there has to be a measure of. You know, does your space truly allow this for you?
Right.
Does
and
that
also,
space?
Not only does your space allow it, but also is it at a manageable amount where you can find it easily? And, you know, if this is an item that you love, that your wife has, can you find it and look at it and enjoy it when you want to? Or is it buried somewhere?
Right, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you want to be able to... have few enough things that you can find what you love easily
mm-hmm.
and what really has meaning.
Mm-hmm. True.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so there are people that specialize in helping people who are hoarders or even grief hoarders in that sense
mm-hmm.
that will help a person. And if you're a person out there that you're watching or listening to this podcast today and you know you're one of those people, you know, put it in the comments and know that I'll be praying for you as you move through this and that you can reach out for help when it comes to the mental health space so that,
mm-hmm.
or a person who can coach you through your clutter and so that
mm-hmm.
you can keep what is important to you. And if you are a person who is friend or family to a person who's going through hoarding due to grief or loss, what are some tips you would give people for that?
First off, lecturing doesn't help.
Right.
Because from the loved one's standpoint, they can see, because they're not doing the grieving the way their loved one is, okay? They're not in that same space. They may be missing that person. Also, you know, chances are there was a mutual connection, but they're not experiencing the grief the same way. So lecturing doesn't work, okay? It just makes the person more stuck, or they feel like they have to justify, explain, and defend. So they're defending the hoard, okay? And that's not what you're wanting to do, okay? But acknowledge, first off, it's important to acknowledge the grief, acknowledge the loss, and be comfortable with the feelings that that person has, okay, whenever they might want to talk about that loss, okay, because that can help even with their recovery, even before it gets to be really huge, okay. It's important to be able to talk about loss as it's happening.
Yeah.
To get that moral support. That way you don't have an emotional hoard of grief inside your head.
Yeah, because there is anger, you know, in terms of the stages of grief that people go through, they can be very angry and
mm-hmm.
hypersensitive
right.
to any perceived criticisms of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll
right.
dig in a bit longer, deeper, however you want to express that. And so there is a delicacy that has to be there. You can't just steamroll in bull in a china shop and go, it's done, your equator goes out, rah, rah, rah. Like, there,
right.
There has to be some reasonability about this. Otherwise, it's a crash and burn thing that can happen with people. And would you say that that it's good if you educate yourself, if you have friends or family that are going through hoarding due to grief or loss, that you educate yourself, and certainly don't call the items that they've accumulated junk or garbage. Don't do it.
Right.
Don't, like, even if you're like, but it's junk. It's broken. It's da da da. If you could, you would get a big, you know, a big unit that you pull into the driveway and pitch it into that. You have to watch how you're expressing. And the way I've understood how to deal with that is that you listen to the person who's hoarding. And, you know, sometimes there's a difference between, let's say, a collection of items that's truly a collection, and things that are of sentimental value, like true nostalgia, keep those, and then junk. Like there is a definite distinction that can be made, but people have to get to that. And I think the biggest thing when I have clients that come for readings, and their mother is still alive, their father's passed, and they're keeping all these things, and they're like, I'm trying to get my mom to let go of all of Dad's big garage tools, like all these different things, and she's not doing it, and she started hoarding other things, and what comes through from the father is like, well, just give it to so-and-so. Just get, like, he'll start directing traffic a little bit, but then he says, I don't need it anymore, so get rid of it. Like, he's very, sometimes that person in spirit could be very clear, and other times they're just, they know that people need to hang on a little longer, but it's a safety, like, if it's a safety issue, spirit will show me a different symbol for that. Like, if it's gotten to, like, it is mildewy, or it's like gotten into that disgusting space of things, then spirit will show me. Yes. Then sometimes spirit will show me those particular symbols. I would say focus on some of the safety aspects. Is it tipping like the Leaning Tower of Pisa, and it's going to fall on your person, you know, in the middle of the night, or even during the day, or is it of the disgusting category? So you got to focus on, I would say, harm reduction.
Right.
A phrase.
And you just say, well, I know your mom really wanted you to be safe. She, you know, when you were a little kid, she did everything for you to be safe.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you're doing some things now to increase your safety. I wonder if that would please her, or what do you suppose she would say about that?
Yeah, those are all good things, like, to encourage in those ways, and to watch, if you're dealing with someone who's hoarding, to watch your level of frustration you have with them. Like, you may have to get counseling so you know how to deal with your person.
Right, just like people who are family members of alcoholics will oftentimes get moral support from Al-Anon.
Right.
To help with that, because it's not going to help your loved one if you were to say to them, you know, your mother would roll over in her grave if she were to see you now. I mean, guilt tripping is a bad thing also.
Exactly.
Okay? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's just spoiling for a fight.
Exactly.
So,
also,
I was going to ask if there's a Hoarders Anonymous.
I haven't heard of any. I think that would be a wonderful idea, because there are some addictive qualities to it, because you start feeling so connected to these things, okay? Like, you know, this could be a piece of paper that your mother wrote the grocery list on back 25 years ago. And it's like, oh, I can't let go of this because she touched this. This is her writing. I need this. when in fact, if your mom, you know, was around, she'd be saying, oh, look at that, I didn't know I still had that, and just pop it up and throw it away.
Sure.
You know?
Some of these items almost become like a security blanket, and it reminds me of, like, in Linus from the Peanuts cartoon.
Yeah.
Comic strip, the idea of I need my security blanket of those things, because to let go of that blanket, it's like I'm letting go of them, and part of their essence. And so, like you said, there's that going through the self-talk, going through working through those issues, and getting help ultimately.
Right. Getting support from friends, if you feel safe enough to share it with friends. Because
mm-hmm.
lots of times, people who are really extreme with hoarding keep it a secret. Okay? So, yeah, get support from friends if you feel safe enough to do that. Get professional help. You can get free referrals from the state level associations of the American Psychological Association. Each one has a state level organization.
Mm-hmm.
And you can call them for free and get three referrals of people who specialize in it. Okay.
Great.
And then you can talk to each one, see how you feel with each one. If none of those three feel right, you can call back again. They're not going to charge you for giving you names. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so since resources are there, if you're needing the help, you know, it can be a very efficient thing to do to get that help that you're needing rather than just continue to struggle on your own. You know, just like when your car needs help, you take it into the mechanic. You don't try to lift up the car, take out the engine, and do what's needed yourself. You know, you take it in to get some expert help.
True. So, okay. And that's a valuable thing, whether you know you're a hoarder yourself, or maybe it's because of grief or loss, or if your loved one, your friend or your family member is a hoarder, to get that counseling so you know how to deal with that is essential, because you don't want to continue to enable someone else's hoarding, especially like you set us up with all the holiday stuff, and there's this accumulation of stuff and everything in the ads and the stores are saying buy more, insulate yourself with feeling, you know, with more things and feel good about your purchase, as it were.
Right.
And
then they have the sales in January on the storage containers too.
Yes, because you don't have any more room in your home.
Right. It makes me think of George Carlin's monologue about stuff. If you've ever watched that monologue,
I've got to look that one up. I bet that's excellent. Get
it's
only
very
later.
Excellent. Yeah, and it's so true. Even though he did that monologue decades ago, it's just as relevant, just as timely now.
Some things are classics.
Yeah, it's a classic for sure. And laughter helps, it really does. Okay, it changes the brain chemistry in our minds, in our brains when we laugh. And if we can laugh about some of the things, that gives us some mastery over it.
Yes.
Because that's not so big and scary and overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah,
I agree.
It's
and if you can get your grieving hoarder self or your grieving hoarder friend or family to laugh about this, it will go a long way. And
right.
You know, so there can be this excessive thing that they're into. Let's say they continue shopping, they continue scavenging for items, they're gifted items that add to their hoarding problem. Maybe they incur a lot of excessive debt because of the shopping and accumulation of things, because they're filling the hole of grief or loss with the thrill of the purchase again and having something near them in that vicinity. I think that's another aspect of grief hoarding that is, very important.
And that's another thing that's not only mental and emotional but physiological too, because when a hoarder goes into a place where they typically do a lot of their shopping, okay, the pleasure centers in the brain go off, ding, 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 just like it does for someone who is addicted to cocaine. When they see cocaine, those pleasure centers automatically go off even before they use the substance. Okay, so taking a concept from the addiction field, okay, they always say to get sober, you need to change your playmates and your playground. So if you know that your weakness are the thrift stores where you can buy a lot of different things for under $1 or $2, okay, and you think, oh, well, so-and-so could use that, or I could do some work on repairing that frame and that would look real nice, you know, because people are always wanting to fix things up too, but they never get around to doing it, okay?
Yes.
So it winds up just laying there. So if you know that the thrift stores, for example, are a weak spot, avoid the thrift stores. If there's a big major discount store, that's a vulnerable spot. Avoid that one.
Online shopping.
Online shopping, too,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so people, it's so, click a little button. You know, they, you know, and I'll say the old days, but you know what I mean, right? QVC, people would QVC shop and stuff like that on the TV and call in.
QVC is still there.
Yeah.
HSN Home Shopping Network, that's still there.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to just pick up the phone. They, you know, you can arrange it so they already have your address, your credit card number, all that. You just say, okay, I want this and such. Okay, it'll arrive in 2 weeks. Okay, thanks, bye. And you're done.
Yeah.
And then it arrives in the mail or wherever, it arrives at your door like a present.
Yes.
And again, the pleasure center goes off in the brain, ding, ding, ding. Yeah.
So I have I have another question. What about cleaning up after the hoarder? Would you suggest people do that? Let's say they're living with a hoarder, and
mm-hmm.
you know, it their son passed, and the wife is really holding on to things, and the husband's having a hard time navigating through their home because there's just this. And it's like, do I clean up after her? Do I, what do I do? It's, they kind of are in that space of maybe he's not such a great organizer himself, right? No offense to the male of the species, but so most of them are not as into that as others. And it's one of those things where it's like, what do you do? Especially if the hoarder's like, don't touch my stuff, and then they're not willing to do anything about it, and you're
mm-hmm.
still trying to live.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard if you're living with someone.
Yeah.
And he's in that headspace. It really is. And you can't make them do anything they don't want to do. That's just counterproductive because, again, they'll dig their heels in.
Yeah.
And it'll get even more severe, okay?
Yeah.
And you want to, and of course you love them. You want the best for them. So, again, talking to them in a loving way, offering resources. You know, with some cleaning up, like they've already cleared out before, then there needs to be some cleaning. Depending on the type of dirt that's left, you may need to get professional cleaners, especially if there's mouse droppings or the severe hoarding, sometimes dead animals have been found that the people didn't know were there. So with that, you really need professionals. You really do with the proper equipment. Okay.
But isn't there a place where if you keep cleaning up after someone, they just expect that you're going to be the one to do that? They never address the problems themselves. They never tackle that real problem, the beliefs and behaviors that are fueling that hoarding and fueling that need somehow for the clutter around them. Like it's some sort of, the clutter almost, sometimes when you're grieving, it's like you can't breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And you even put yourself into situations where you can't breathe. And sometimes the stuff, but there's this feeling of, but it's kind of hugging me, and the compression of all of those things help to contain me to some level or degree, right? There's that thought form that people can get in on track with. And it's trying to move past and really tackle those issues and see that there is light at the end of that hoarding tunnel.
Right, right. And see, that brings up another thing that goes on, too, and that's learned helplessness.
Yes.
Some hoarders will feel a sense of helplessness because it's just so massive and everything has this big emotional connection. And it's like, how do I even begin to start on this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. And the best thing is to help them look at it in terms of baby steps. Just baby steps, okay? What little thing can they do if they're wanting to do something, but it's just so overwhelming, thing is learned helplessness. And by the way, Martin Seligman has written some excellent books for the lay people. He was one of the founding researchers of that concept, mm-hmm. learned helplessness. And so, yeah, divide it up into little baby steps because the whole big massive board, it didn't form overnight, so it's not going to be done away with overnight. Okay?
Right.
That concept can help a person, too, if they're into the learned helplessness. And then, like I was saying, break it down into little tiny baby steps.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point.
And praise them when they do something.
Mm-hmm.
If they do a little thing like they wipe clean a corner on the kitchen counter, okay, and, you reinforce that. You say, oh, that's wonderful, you did that. Don't respond by saying, well, if you could do that, you could do everything else.
I just wish you'd do that all the time. And those little snarky things don't help. And
leave criticism out the door. They've got enough criticism going on inside of their brain.
Right. And so we have to watch our unrealistic expectations that we might have on a person. The learned helplessness, but then also building on that reinforcement is so essential.
Right.
So what do you say to the people? I just keep throwing stuff at you, Brenda. What do you say to the people who say, let's say the mother is alive and just says, well, you're going to have to do it after I die. You'll have to deal with it when I die. I'm not going to deal with this accumulation that your dad did and that I did. And it's going to be on your shoulders. And there's the adult child is like, let me at it right now. Can I do it now? Can I do it now? I don't want to wait until you have passed and I'm in grief about you passing, and then I have to have this frustration about you and that you didn't clean up your mess before you left. I mean, you're not Egyptian. You can't take it with you. Like,
here's a very common thing.
It is.
It's not unusual
horrible.
For people when their parents have passed, they find these great big jars full of buttons. That doesn't go to anything. And these are jars of buttons that they've had around for decades, okay? Not to mention other things. And it's like, well, why is this stuff here, okay? Yeah, and again, you want to be able to listen to your mom, like say if it's your mom, father has passed, and she says, well, I don't want to deal with any of
this. It's too overwhelming. I can't do it.
It's okay to just be very patient, be loving, be in the here and now. Invite her to talk about, tell me some more about it being overwhelming.
And then,
and she may need to just kind of let it out, okay? But all of that stuff that she's dumping out has been swirling around inside of her head. If she can get it out, it's kind of like emotional vomiting in a way.
Very much,
Have all these toxic thoughts in your head, get them out so they're not in there, okay? And then that can lead to, eventually to, well, Mom, how can I help you with the study? Or how can I help you with the kitchen? although the kitchen can feel overwhelming, okay, but, you know, pick one small part of the house or the apartment. Okay, Mom, how could I help you with thus and such? How could I help you with the picture collection? That might be very productive and also help organize pictures, and she might have stories to tell that might help with her healing, too. Just anything that she's willing to do.
I think another aspect of this that is really beautiful is if you can encourage people that if your grief hoarder has a bunch of jewelry or those kind of special collections, that they could be encouraged to either sell it or to gift it to various people in the family so that they have something that's of value to them.
Right.
Instead of, you know, having all of that accumulated around a person.
Right, right. That may be something that you might want to do further on down the road, deal with things that might be less valuable in the beginning.
Right.
Yeah, because I've seen with some families there can be this thing of, oh, you just want my money, you just want to sell my jewelry, and I worked so hard for it, and you know, you're just ungrateful, you wanted some money. Well, why are you even bothered being here with me anyway?
Yeah, so sad when people get into that space of it. You know, someone's written a comment, which is a great comment. I recently had to clean out my mom's house. I made sure all the female relatives got a piece of jewelry and all the males a tool, and then let them go through the bigger items such as furniture. I donated knickknacks, costume jewelry, in the Christmas gift bags to a local nursing home, so the residents got a gift for Christmas. And I know my mom was happy about that. I took very little for myself because pictures and memories are the most precious.
Beautiful.
Yes.
Awesome.
I think well done.
Wonderful tribute to
her mom. Yeah. It's a way of dealing with that. And someone else has written a comment, which is also great. My Depression-era relatives seem to be the hardest to get on board with giving away things. They grew up without and see value in saving everything.
Right. That's very common.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing, too, is the era that person grew up in and also what their individual circumstances were, whether they were in the major depression era generation, or even people who grew up without a lot of things, you know, who were low income, and they had to make do and repurpose and recycle everything long before that became an expression. Okay?
Yes. Yeah.
But there was a time when women had to save flour sacks and make clothes out of them for their kids.
Yes.
So everything can be reused. So, yeah, that's how, for some of those folks, it can be hard to let go of that.
I'll never forget my grandmother's house. She lived in a small house, but then she had, like, an attached outbuilding, and it was so full of stuff. Like, so full of stuff. And yet she lived in this kind of, like, a meager setting. And then she'd have all this, like, there was furniture stacked on furniture and all the stuff that was in the other space. And I kept thinking, well, why does she have all that in there? And then there's not enough place for people to sit in here. And so some people will have, like, one room or an outbuilding that it all kind of gets junked in. And this is a grandmother who did live through the Depression. I mean, she was the kind of person who, with the thinnest little layer of butter was allowed on the bread. You know, that kind of, you know, every little speck of something had to be, you know, just really dosed out here so that you can't have a nice heaping thing of butter on that. Nope.
Yeah. I remember those behaviors. Yeah.
Yes.
So that can give you more understanding, too, which can help you in making your choices as to how you approach your loved one, how you help them. It may even involve, if you don't know the different eras that people may have grown up in, do some reading in the history books. What was the Cold War era like?
Right.
Where you had to save everything, you know, and keep it in a safe place, secure place, because the bomb might come any second because we did have air raid drills back then.
That's true.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or the depression or any other time, you know, find out, you know, more about what that person possibly dealt with growing up during their formative years.
Yeah.
And also their adult years. Also, another thing to broach, too, is to find out what kinds of items make them feel happy to have around,
mm-hmm.
okay,
mm-hmm.
and what items don't give that degree of happiness.
Right.
Okay. For example, with the woman whose mother had this shopping list and she wanted to keep the shopping list, okay, which gives her more enjoyment, this old ragged shopping list from 25, 30 years ago, or is it a scarf that she hand-knitted?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, kind of like helping the person get do some values clarification, you know, develop some priorities, like, gee, what really is important to me? After all the losses I've been through, what remains important?
Yeah, there's a lady, a very famous clutter lady from Japan. Her name is Marie Kondo. And so I think that's who you're thinking of. And her method is, you know, does this item bring me joy? Like, does it bring me happiness? And then that's how she decides what stays. And if it doesn't,
mm-hmm.
out the door.
Right. What I would add to that is, does this item give me meaningfulness? Okay. Does it commemorate something that's real important, you know, to me about that person? And also, what do I need to keep that doesn't bring me joy? For example, tax records.
Look at you being all practical. And I can hear the gallery going boo.
But yeah, tax records, advanced directives, all of that stuff that's so important that
yeah.
we have to deal with.
Good, keep that.
Doesn't bring us a lot of joy.
No. All that paperwork.
Yeah. As a cousin of mine says, part of doing that, those very grown-up things, as she puts it, very grown-up things, okay? So we do have to do that. Even though they don't bring us joy.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And taxes can also trigger hoarding, too, because if you've had somebody who was self-employed and they've had to keep every single receipt and document every mile they've ever driven in their car and hang on to those mileage reports, too, it can be hard to let go of the stuff, even though there are legal limits as to how long you have to hold on to stuff, and then beyond a certain time limit, you can throw them away.
I knew a truck driver who kept all those paper records of everything, like getting the truck weighed, all of the different reports and logs, mileage logs that he had to keep. And
right.
It was like, why aren't you getting rid of those things? And for him, it's like he couldn't. I mean, it was worthless paper to us, but
mm-hmm.
to him it was all these miles that he was on the road.
Yeah.
It was like, it would be the equivalent of a journal or diary
mm-hmm.
to you
right.
and me. You know, it would be like that kind of level that of little numbers and little things written down on little carbon copy yellow things.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Like, a documentation of his life.
Yes, yes. So sometimes when people, a lot of the grief we're talking about is after someone has passed, but sometimes there's a grief for the life that a person had before, and they're
right.
holding on to those items, and it has meaning to them
uh-huh.
that is... to get rid of that, again, would be like getting rid of the dog's hair, like you mentioned earlier.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So many layers to this discussion. It's been great. And any last thoughts that you'd like to bring to this? Because I know time's gone so fast, and it's been great.
Has gone fast.
I know. Poof. You're doing great. Is there any last things that you think would be great for people as they're dealing with grief and hoarding, either for themselves or for their loved ones?
I guess if I were to summarize, I would say whether you're the person doing the grieving and holding on to stuff or the loved one who cares about them, get information, learn about grief, learn about hoarding, hanging on to stuff, learn about organization. For the loved one, learn about the historical eras that this person may have gone through. Mm-hmm. That gives you a context for what they're doing also.
Yes.
Also, remember the value of listening. Remember, this is a person who's in pain. They're not doing it to draw attention. They're not doing it just to be obstinate or contrary, okay? So listening is very important. It's a very powerful thing. But, yeah, just learn as much as you can about learned helplessness, about hoarding, even behavioral things like positive reinforcement, you know, how to give somebody encouragement without sounding judgmental, things like that. And if you're actually having trouble letting go of stuff, don't be afraid to ask for help, too, because it does feel overwhelming.
I think those are great tips. I'm glad you summarized that for people again. And I would encourage people to rewatch this show, catch the replay of this and watch it again so that you can feel that sense of, yeah, I know what that is. And now I realize I can empower myself and other people as they go through this and that I can empathize with them and move through it compassionately, but also with more clarity and less clutter. Less clutter.
Less physical and mental clutter.
Yes, amen. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You can have feelings and emotions without the clutter.
That's right. There.
So you're still going to be you. You're still going to be you and your feelings and all that. Mm-hmm. And hopefully better feelings, too, and feeling more in control of that.
And less identification with things, with the stuff, and more identification with yourself and with your soul.
Right, because ultimately that's what we have.
Yeah.
That's what we have. Yeah. And there are some people who have been hit by tornadoes overnight who have lost everything they had, whether they were hoarders or not hoarders or something in between. And so I would hope that we can all kind of keep them in our thoughts too.
Absolutely.
Because imagine being a hoarder and a tornado comes and just tears everything away.
Right. Or takes all of the great items they had of their loved one and now they don't have anything to hold on to. You know, we're like you said, pictures and items and it's all gone. And you have to get to a place of, it's almost like that Buddhist understanding of permanence versus impermanence.
Right.
And that what is permanent is the soul. What is permanent are the memories that are there. And we have to learn to let go with love instead of with such deep regret and grasping onto those things.
Exactly. It's like the Buddhists say, attachment causes suffering.
It does.
And none of us really want to suffer.
But I love being attached. I love it. It's so fun. So I get it. There's that human part of us that has such glee with the attachment. This is mine, and but it's ours for a little while. Then we have to let it go with appreciation and gratitude and love, and keep all the best, the love and the light that remains,
and the wonderful people around us.
Beautiful, yes, indeed. Oh well, this has been great, Brenda. Thank you so much for being on the show today, Dr. Brenda Hawkins. We really appreciate you being here today and sharing some tips as people go through grief and hoarding, or maybe it's something you're about to go through yourself or help a loved one through. This will be a show that will help you in many, many ways and give you some some direction to go in and some new thoughts and maybe a restoration within yourself to look at it from the soul's perspective as you go through this particular part of a journey. So,
wonderful. Thank you so much, Lil, for having me today.
You're so welcome. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in today. Oh, I almost forgot. If anyone's interested, I do have some online video classes that you can purchase viewing access to. One is Magical Journey Within, which is a fantastic class that I did for people to really understand the energetic inner working of yourself and how to feel the body and get it to respond in healing ways and with the soul. And then the second video I did is Your Inner Guide. And it's one of those experiences of how to listen to the guidance that is there for you, that your soul is giving you, and how to access it. So those are great videos that I have available for viewing access until January 31st, and then that link is coming down. So I encourage you to check that out on my website, willowwhite.com. There's a purchase page for that so that you can get those online video classes right now. All right, I'll see you next week for another great show, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to Wednesdays with Willow. Like, subscribe, and follow. Bye-bye.
Bye.